asylum. For a terrifying tale of fear, lust, and insanity.
Live at AsylumFantasyFootball.com, it's the Tuesday Night Blitz.
Yes, we are Fligger and Briggs. Welcome to the Asylum, and drop us a line at AsylumFootball@gmail.com.
On Twitter, at AsylumFootball.
Yes, indeed, and all you locals, WSRU 88.1 FM, the voice of the rock.
All right, Rick, no time for shtick tonight. Before we get to the guest, real quick, listen in at the end of the show. Go to AsylumFantasyFootball.com. Check out the new look site. Thank you to Scott Fisher, the Fantasy Football Oasis, and we'll get in more to it in the end of the show. Without further ado, is that how you say it? Ado? A-D-I-E-U, ado?
A-D-O. Ado.
No, I don't think that's what it is.
How much you want to bet?
You ugly American.
How much you want to bet?
Oh, I'll bet.
Anything you want.
I'll bet you a beer.
You got it.
I'm going to look that up. So you talk to our guest. I have some research to do. Rick, we have a bit of a fantasy football luminary with us tonight.
Yes, indeed. We have Mr. Corey Parson. Welcome into the asylum.
Uh-oh.
Were you going to connect us or not?
I did. Hold on. Let's try this again.
Corey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
There we are. We thought we lost you there for a minute.
Corey is the producer of the Roto Experts in the Morning on the SiriusXM Fantasy Channel, a sports reporter for Sway in the Morning, and co-host of the Sunday Showdown. Corey, it sounds like you're a busy man.
I try to do as much things as I possibly can. I get very little rest, and on days like today where it's 200 degrees in New York City, you can imagine what I feel like right now.
Well, that's good to know, because it's about 90 degrees here, and we're not even in the city. So, yeah, I can hardly imagine what you feel like. But but you're getting into a real busy time of the year, especially now, I would think.
Yeah, right now is a real busy time of the year. You know, we just don't cover football. We also cover baseball with the All-Star game being in the city this year. Down in Javits Center at the Fan Fest throughout the weekend, but the thing about it is, guys, while you're at the Fan Fest and we got the SiriusXM Fantasy booth set up, all everybody wants to talk about is fantasy football. It's that time of year, so definitely need to start getting the listeners out there prepared to win their leagues. But before you can win your league, you got to do very well in your draft, and that's what we're going to do tonight, help everybody out, or at least try to get a good look at how we can be helping everybody out, because we still got some learning to do also, training camp coming up around the corner soon, so... You know, pick each other's brain and see what we like and where we can find some value at.
Yeah, no question about it. I'll tell you, Corey, this year doing a lot of the early drafts, I'm sure you've done 1,000 of them already. I know we have. It's a tougher year that I've ever seen. There's some trends going on I want to get into. I think what we want to start off with, we had you on about this time of the year last year, and you had your holy trinity of running backs. I believe they were Ray Rice, Arian Foster, and LeSean McCoy. And, boy, has that changed. I'm going to assume your holy trinity has changed this year. Is it even a trinity?
You don't really even have a holy trinity this year. If you had to name a top three, I mean, everybody's would be difficult. I think I signed up for my NFFC league about a week and a half ago, and I put my Kentucky Derby-style rankings of where you want to draft from, I put it at 8. I think you got about 8 to 9 running backs on the board and that's going to go off the board in the first round that you're pretty comfortable with in a PPR format, and even standard formats also, maybe in a standard you can drop down a little bit before you get your RB1, but definitely for PPR, which most people play nowadays, it's about 8 guys early in that first round that I think you can target. If I had to choose a top 3, oh boy, for myself personally, it would be Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, and Doug Martin. Much different than last year, right?
Yeah, much different from last year, that's for sure. There's not even one included in there. I'm with you. I have Jamal Charles, Adrian Peterson. I'm still waffling on Arian Foster. He scores a lot of touchdowns, so I have him at three right now. But, yeah, it's real different. And yeah, Rick brought up trends, and we've been having some debates the last two or three weeks with different people. And, of course, you know, we've talked before, we go running back heavy early and often. There is a trend out there of going wide receiver, and getting those studs and then trying to pick up some mid-range running backs going into, you know, the middle rounds. Now, my argument is the depth isn't there at running back. What do you think?
Nah, that's a real risky gamble. You got to come out of those first two rounds with at least one running back. If you go running back, and you try to wait for the third round to get your RB1, you could be looking at Darren McFadden. And we all know Darren McFadden as an RB1 handle with kid. I mean, I think Darren McFadden get hurt playing flag football. So if you want to go into a season with your running backs, with your two running backs being Darren McFadden and Ryan Matthews, by all means, go ahead and take that risk. But I just can't see it. I want one rock-solid stud, so definitely in the first two rounds, I'm going to get one of those guys. And I mean, you know, you like to people say, okay, you like to zig when everybody else is zagging. It does happen, but there's no real value. I can see one guy in the middle that's going fourth round right now that could be, maybe two, that could be a borderline RB1, and that's maybe Lamar Miller and Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. What do you guys think?
Now, I'll tell you what, Lamar Miller especially, he's one I've brought up a lot. Look, I like the fact it seems to be his job. He's going in as the number one. I worry about that Dolphins offense, number one, with him, and I just haven't seen it from him. I mean, he's sort of been coronated as his low-end number one already. Haven't seen him at all. In terms of Le'Veon Bell, look, I just worry about him going into that offense. It was such a disaster last year running the ball. None of these guys, save for Rashard Mendenhall, have gone anywhere. All the crazy stuff Todd Haley likes to do. I worry about them both. I think I like the prospects of Bell better. Could you give me a good argument for Lamar Miller? This is a guy I'm just not sold on yet.
You said on the head with the Dolphins offense, I like him better as an RB2 than an RB1. Really, I like him as a flex. You're not going to get him as that. But, you know, towards the end of last season when he got a chance, 5 yards to carry, the offense should be improved this year. They're going to give him an opportunity. They get Vonta Leach. If they bring Vonta Leach out there, I mean, that opens eyes because he's one of the best lead blockers in the NFL. I mean, he's going to be a three-down back. He's going to get the looks in the goal line. He's set up, but the opportunity does not mean he's going to be successful. You know how us fantasy owners are. We kind of want to see it before we can stick our neck on the line, especially with a draft pick right there in the fourth or fifth round, a guy we're going to be depending on. Would I take the gamble? Yeah, because I do think that the 5 yards per carry towards the end of the last season was very promising. Is it a guy I'm targeting? I hope I can do a little bit better. But I can see it with Lamar Miller. Bell, to me, is probably he's a rookie, so that makes it tough to take Bell. But I think you know that Bell's going to take in. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, they want to establish that run. They want to get back to what they were when they were playing late in the season. And I think that they look at Bell as a guy three-down back, knocking in the goal line, and he's the type of running back I think that they look for to do it like that. That's why they drafted him, so he's going to get the opportunity. Other than that, the other situation, I'll throw this by you guys. I don't know what I would do if I'm drafting right now, and it's still very early. I don't know if we're going to know the answer to this a month from now. What are you guys thinking with the running back situation with the Denver Broncos? Right now, I look at it like, you know what, this is somebody else's problem.
Yeah, I'm looking to give it to somebody else. Right now, I was actually talking to Todd McDaniel, the FF counselor, last week about that, and we were talking about Monte Ball. I actually think that it's going to be his job, but what does that actually entail? I still think Knowshon Moreno is going to be your third down back and going to get a whale of a load of work. So as far as really targeting anybody from Denver, even though I think it's going to be Monte Ball, I'm not real thrilled on him, and I'm like you. Let it be somebody else's problem.
Yeah, something I'm looking at, Monte Ball going a little early for my taste because I think everybody seems to have assumed that is, in fact, going to be his job. coming out of training camp. No, Sean Moreno's a guy I'm picking up and stashing. In a short stretch last year, the kid really looked impressive, lived up to the promise he had coming out of college when we were drafting him way too early his rookie year and even going into his second year. This is a guy you're getting in sometimes a 12, 13, 14 round. I stashed this guy a lot. Now, it may not pay off, but I think it could pay off big. If somebody were to get number one carries in Denver, I think he's going to be successful. I just don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, I got Moreno comes at a good buying opportunity that late in the draft. Hillman also later on in the draft, but Hillman was, I don't want to say it was a failure last year, but, you know, guys, they run, not they, but we run out there, we fall in love with these rookie running backs, and the reason why there's no depth at running back is because the class, the past couple of rookie running back classes, outside of last season, I mean, it's been a lot of misses. Ryan Matthews was a miss. Daniel Thomas, Mark Ingram, these guys, we missed on these guys. Ronnie Hillman, you know, a lot of these guys didn't end up being the running backs we thought they were, and that's why, as far as the fantasy football purposes, that's why the pool is thinning out, because you got the elite guys, and after that, you're scratching your head because you got to take gambles on these guys.
Yeah, I agree there. And here's a guy that I've been kind of looking at as a sleeper going in. Last year, you know, Sean Green over 1,000 yards rushing with the Jets and about 8 touchdowns. I really like Chris Ivory moving up into that team from New Orleans. He's going to be cut loose a little bit. The kid's only 23 years old, and he's fresh. And even though I don't like the Jets at all, I think he could be serviceable as a flex or an RB2.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you nailed it, hitting it on the head. I mean, he's a Jet, though. This is just... And it's that Jet offense. It's Mark Sanchez and butt fumbles and Rex Ryan, you know, more or less, Rex Ryan just basically a figurehead coach at this point. And, boy, that's an ugly situation out there. And it's always some controversy surrounding the Jets. But he does seem to have some decent fantasy, he might have a decent opportunity for fantasy-wise. He's going to get the carries, catch ball out the backfield. Injuries are a concern with Ivory, but I do think as a flex, you could do pretty well. I've seen him start to go a little bit too early, though. When you're talking about drafting Chris Ivory in the 4th, 5th round, that's what happens when you have Larry Fitzgerald and Julio Jones on your team. Or you have Jimmy Graham on your team, and you come back and get another wide receiver. Then you slot in Chris Ivory in as your RB2, and, you know, I understand how big those points are from those stud receivers in the PPR, but you're in a very dangerous way when you got Chris Ivory going in the early September as your RB2, because even if he does have a very good season, it's not going to be an elite-level season at all. He's not going to get nowhere close to top 12 to be an RB1.
So being in New York, Corey, something that I'm always interested in. Are you a Jets or a Giants fan?
I can't stand the New York football team. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just curious, and maybe you don't know. I was watching the Home Run Derby last night, and anybody associated with the Yankees getting booed, and I guess it's not Shea Stadium anymore, whatever they call that now. When you live in New York, and if you're a fan of New York teams, how do they decide which team you root for? I always wonder about being from the Pittsburgh area. We don't have a lot of choices.
The way, of course, the big draws are the Yankees, the Giants, and the New York Knicks. Those are the big draws. The other teams are the secondary teams. Those secondary teams, the Jets, the Mets, the Brooklyn Nets now, I guess if you're a hockey, the Islanders, those teams are really, the Jets and the Mets being the prime examples, those are Long Island teams. Those are people that live out on Long Island tend to root for those teams more, and people that live in the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens may have take a stronger liking to those teams. But as far as most New Yorkers go, the Yankees and the Giants and the Knicks are the teams that they root for. And then people, as you go further out on the Long Island, you'll get a large fan base of Mets and Jets fans. Mets fan and Jets fan is normally the same guy. Giant fan and Yankee fan is normally the same guy.
I don't see
too many guys who like the Giants and the Mets.
It'd have to be tough. And I think if I'm living there, you'd probably want to put yourself on the sides of the Yankees and of the Giants. I don't know why you go the other direction and suffer that way as far as the Mets and the Jets. I don't know. It has nothing to do with anything, just something I'm curious of. So let's move back to the top of the running back rankings, what we talked about. You listed them at Peterson, Charles, and Martin, somewhere in that order. I had the same top three, and then and number four, Arian Foster. This is a guy who was pretty much a consensus number one overall going into last season. Had a fantastic season last year. I can't offer any reason why I moved him to four. I really can't. Do you have anything? Is there any fear? Do you think these other three guys are better? What has caused, and I want to get into the other two of your Holy Trinity after this, but what caused Arian Foster? It's not a deep slide, but the slide a little bit in your rankings.
I'm satisfied with Foster at four. I'm also satisfied with him at three or two. The yards per carry going down last season kind of scared me. The heavy workload kind of scared me, and he's going to be looked upon to take a heavy workload again this season. But the thing that really stuck out the most to me was the dependence on touchdowns. And I understand he could close the door at the goal line. He's an excellent goal line runner. They rely on him in the goal line, and he gets in the end zone. But when almost 50% of your fantasy points that Arian Foster scored came off touchdowns, he scored 17 touchdowns last year. You put together what he did with yards and receptions, and he scores 10 touchdowns, you're looking at an RB2. And that's kind of what – and I think the upside with Martin and Charles is a little bit higher. Now, upside is not a word I like to go about when we talk talking fantasy football, because upside is almost be a dirty word, because upside have you drafting Chris Ivory. But and the situation in Arian Foster's situation, he's still going to be a stud. The offense still runs through Foster, but I'm just a little bit worried about that heavy dependence on touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree. That's what makes him so attractive, I think, is the touchdowns. I mean, obviously he's a good running back and they've got a good offense. But you're taking a gamble if he happens to have, you know, like you said, a season where you only have 9-10 touchdowns. Will that happen? I don't know, but, you know, it's tough to gamble on that. And that brings up another guy we were talking about. It's being taken very early. Rick and I both have talked about it, and we still kind of factor in the Fred Jackson effect, but a lot of people are taking C.J. Spiller very high.
Yeah, you know what? And the thing is, with Spiller, he's going high. He's such a dynamic player. He doesn't need a whole bunch of touches to be a dynamic player. If I'm not mistaken, last season he finished around 6th or 7th in the PPR, and he didn't have that huge workload, those big amount of touches. He's so explosive. He's going to get more opportunities in the new offense. But Fred Jackson is still in the mix, and Fred Jackson is going in like the 12th, 13th round. That's a steal right there. You know, Jackson's getting to the point with his career where he's banged up from time to time, but Marone is going to use both those running backs. But Spiller is the guy you draft in the first round because of how dynamic he can be, passes out the backfield. He's a home run hitter, just like Jamal Charles. I mean, on any given play, he can go to the house, so that's what you like about Spiller. That's what makes him so appealing to fantasy. But Fred Jackson's still going to be in the mix, so that's why I would rank those other guys a little bit higher than Spiller.
Yeah, Spiller, I saw he seems to be trending back down a little bit, running about 7.5 right now, which seems a little more in line. I saw some real early drafts back in February and March. There were some people,
he's
I think,
going
probably,
one.
Yeah, outsmarting themselves, taking him one, and was definitely in that top three, starting to slip back. So going back to the other two guys we talked about.
I saw him in an NFFC draft last night. One I'm looking at right now, and this was done last night, he went at eight. He went at eight. And
yeah.
I think eight is a good spot for Spiller.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to talk about taking any risks in the first round. If he is a bit of a risk, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be in that eight spot. Other guys going down around there, Ray Rice and LeSean McCoy, the guys we talked about as part of the top three last year. I think, you know, I worry about Bernard Pierce a little bit, I guess, but I still got Ray Rice there. If I'm picking 8th, 9th, 10th, and Ray Rice and LeSean McCoy are down there, I'm feeling real comfortable, especially coming back quick in the second round with an opportunity to grab another guy with similar skills.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I think that's the place to be this year. I think 8, 9, 10, that range is where you want to be because you have so many different options. You could be looking at Rice. You could be looking at McCoy. You could be looking at Spiller. You come around a turn, Brandon Marshall could be sitting there. Alfred Morris could be sitting there. That's such a prime opportunity in those spots right there. And that's kind of the way I'm drafting from those positions. But as far as Rice is concerned, it's like Pierce is still in the mix, but Ray Rice is still the best player. He's still going to play, you know, knock on wood. We fully expect him to play 16 games. And do you see him between running and pass and catching the ball? Do you guys see him getting less than 300 combined touches this season?
I don't. I have him ranked number four right now. I mean, he was a number five scoring running back last year. And I'm not that afraid of Bernard Pierce. I think they run the offense through Ray Rice. I'm not going to I know they're going to like to throw the ball this year. But, you know, Bolden's gone. I don't know if Torrey Smith's going to be carrying a load. I think it's still going to go through Ray Rice.
Well, I think when you talk about Rice, he's going to have 65 or 70 catches. Having Bernard Pierce there probably helps. It wouldn't hurt for his carries to go down a little bit. I think it keeps him healthy, keeps him fresh, and you can pencil him in for 65 grabs this year, which I think – so now you're getting down 8, 9, 10. It's just fantastic value.
Yeah, exactly. And, you like you said, if you factor in 70 receptions – I'm almost guarantee he's going to get at least 230 carries.
Yeah, no question about it. So you get to that 300 touch mark. You know, what I find interesting, and you said, and I agree, you're talking about that 8th, 9th, 10th spot is the spot you want to be drafting this year. I think there's less risk down there. You know, I look at the top guys. Doug Martin, love what he did, but I think he's a bit of a risk. You always worry about that sophomore slump. He did it in streaks last year. I think we can all agree on that. He disappeared for some games, had some huge games. You know, there's question marks. You know, Jamal Charles, we're all ranking him in that top three. We've done that for a couple years now, and it hasn't panned out. I really do believe this year's the year for him. But I think there's a little bit of risk associated with Jamal Charles. We talked about C.J. Spiller. I think there's less risk at the bottom of the first round, and you're going to have these other guys taking the risk ahead of you, the upside guys, as you mentioned, and you get sort of solid, almost guaranteed production at the bottom of the first round.
No, and it's true. And then, I mean, the guy I really like that could slip down to that spot, I mean, if you get, of course, I mean, risk is involved with all of these guys, but if you can get Trent Richardson sliding down your board on draft day, I mean, you got to be salivating, because the North Turner system with Chud out there as the head coach, I mean, I understand he's Dr. James Andrew for a scope here, a scope there, you know, bruised ribs here, but if you can get out there and you can get the most out of him, and he falls on draft day because people are scared about his injury situation. A three-down running back, catch passes out the backfield, finish at the goal line, going to get the opportunity to be the fantasy back that Ryan Matthews was supposed to be in North Turner's system. And I think Richardson is ready to handle that load. And that's who I'm looking for down around that 8, 9, 10 range. I want Richardson to drop down there. And I think that's an excellent buying opportunity to a guy that could very well finish as a top three fantasy back this season.
Yeah, no doubt. I know. A month or two ago, I was picking him up in that 11-12 hole. He's steadily creeping his way up. I think there's a lot of people agree with you there, sitting at about 7.13 on his average pick right now in terms of ADP. So I think he's starting to work his way up. You know, again, here's a guy, he's the rare fantasy back you have out there. We mentioned it with Lamar Miller. He's going to be a three-down back, assuming he stays healthy. And you have that risk with anybody. He's the only game in town, and I think he just continues to put up numbers. I think the Cleveland offense is improving, although, like I said, he's not slipping down to the bottom of the draft as much right now.
Nah, he's getting, like you said, he's trying to creep back up. So you may miss on him, but, you know, you never know. Every draft is different, and not everybody's playing the league that we play in. So, you know, you're in your Yahoo league, you're in your ESPN league, and, you know, you could really get a buying opportunity if guys are scared to pull the trigger on Trent Richardson. I love Trent this year. I would, if I knew that he can get me 16 games, I would draft him number two.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I tell you what, he is really, I don't know. I haven't really been targeting him until really recently here, because he has been moving up, and I'm really liking the prospects of him. One guy that's been interesting is Steven Jackson in Atlanta. He's been steadily creeping up, and, you know, there's a lot of high hopes for him. Is he still having in the tank for another year?
I absolutely think so. We were talking about this on the Roto Express the other morning, and I know you got people that say, oh, well, look, he's on the other side of 30, and they're going to throw the ball a lot in Atlanta. I mean, it's Steven Jackson, who's been healthy primarily for the most part of the past two or three seasons. Steven Jackson was looking at 8-9-man fronts all the time. When he was in St. Louis, he was the only game in town. He was the whole show.
Right.
Now you get to Atlanta where it's Tony Gonzalez and it's Julio Jones and it's Roddy White. He's not going to be looking at those 8-9-man fronts. Not to mention, look at all of those red zone touches he's going to get. When Michael Turner couldn't finish off drives last year, Steven Jackson's going to come in there and he's going to finish off those drives. You're talking about double-digit touchdowns from Steven Jackson, going to catch passes, going to have at least 1,000 yards rushing in that offense. Boy, Steven Jackson looks like a first-round draft pick. If you see any signs of him playing very well in preseason, I guess this guy can see slipping up into that first round. If you can get Steven Jackson in the second, I mean, you really could be cooking with gas if you can pick him up as an RB2.
Yeah, I agree with you. He has shown no signs of slowing down. And like you said, moving into such an improved offense, he's not going to be looking at 8-9-man fronts. There's nowhere to go but up with him. And we're the same way. We're very high on him. And, I mean, he's going to be – I don't know if he's going to be as great value later on as you start moving towards August, but still he's going to be worth, like you said, a first-round pick or early second.
Yeah, I'm looking at the same draft I was speaking about earlier. This is you know, recent drafting, and I'm talking about he went at 211. Can you imagine getting him at 211? You're almost starting your draft off with Doug Martin and Steven Jackson. So that's excellent stuff right there. So, but I do think by the time we get to late August, he's going to slide. He's going to get closer to the first round.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you look at some of the guys that are going ahead of him. A guy I know I have a lot of fears about, Rick illustrated several episodes back, the steady decline. Matt Forte still going, you know, about mid-second round. This is a guy it's just been a steady decline. There's been health issues. He's got his contract. He's happy. Do you still see, at the middle of the second round, you could be looking as an RB1. How are you feeling if Matt Forte is your RB1?
Oh, I tell you what, you get up off the draft table and Matt Forte is your RB1, you better hit the Bears hard, because you can't feel comfortable like that. Because, you know, I looked him up on ESPN, and the first thing that it said was, Forte starting to become a bit of an injury concern. But he played 16 games last season. So, you know, first of all, I don't know if you guys watch the NBA, but he has the kind of ankles. I think him and Steph Curry share the same ankle ligament. He's always day-to-day, game-time decision with a high ankle sprain or some kind of sprained ankle. He can't finish near the goal line at all. But in a PPR, you really can't. He's so hard to pass on in the PPR, especially in this new offense where he could catch 70 passes. But he's another guy that I think, you know what, somebody else's problem. I'd rather not deal with that headache Sunday after Sunday, wondering if Matt Forte is going to play. So I'll let him slip. I'll go grab somebody else. Listen, I'm not saying he's going to have a bad season. I'm really he's a head scratcher for me. I'd rather not just deal with him.
Yeah, and that brings up another guy. That has 2 years ago, he was the NFL leading rusher. He's coming back from this Liz Frank, you know, MJD. I love the guy, but I'm awful nervous about him.
Yeah, matter of fact, we're going to have our MJD on the show tomorrow morning. I give a quick plug if I'm allowed to, 8:15 a.m. Eastern time. We're going to be talking with Maurice Jones through, and that Liz Frank injury is definitely going to be a topic that comes up. The thing about that is those injuries are very, very difficult injuries. The guys that return from those injuries, they normally don't play very well. Those injuries take very long time to heal. And not to mention the fact they get injured again. MJD appears to be on the other side of his career. Last year when he was holding out for that money, it was almost he was saying, I need to get this one last contract before my body starts to break down. And now, look, a year later, Jacksonville Jaguars are saying, glad we didn't give you that money last year, because MJD, the workload, the list Frank is a very difficult injury to recover from. So he's a guy that's right now, listen, if he's healthy and he plays 16 games, like you said, he could lead the league in rushing, and if you draft him in the third round, you will win your fantasy league. But if you gamble on him in the third round, he doesn't come through for you, it's not going to hurt you that much. You're going to have to see. Training camp. It's all about what happens in training camp for MJD. If he goes out there and he's been playing well in training camp and he looks pretty healthy and he's good to go, I'm not going to raise him up to the first round or even the mid-second. I'll pass him at those points. But, you know, he still can have some fantasy value. Another head-scratcher. He's a must-see player in training camp. You have to see what's going to happen with him. Hopefully we can get fantasy owners some more information tomorrow morning.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Check that out, 8:15 tomorrow morning on the SiriusXM Fantasy Channel. You know, sticking with MJD, like you said, top of the third round, I think there's less risk involved there. Just in terms of I'm already going to have a stud running back. I may have a second stud running back or a top wide receiver. So it's a risk I'm willing to take. My biggest concern with that Liz Frank being a foot injury, sort of back to your NBA analogy, you know, I always worry about the big men, the centers. I think it's Greg Oden. When you have skilled players with foot issues, I always worry about that. That's my fear with Ahmad Bradshaw. Now he's signed with Indianapolis, and he's starting. I don't want to say he's shooting up draft boards, but I think he's going two or three rounds higher than I'd be willing to risk it. When you get these foot injuries, these foot concerns, these ankle concerns with skill guys in the NFL, especially with big men in the NBA, these are things I tend to shy away from because it doesn't have to be seriously injured to affect their performance and to keep them out of ball games.
No, I agree 100%. Ahmad Bradshaw's foot, that's a chronic injury. You know it's going to come a point in the season where Ahmad Bradshaw is not going to be on your team. So if you draft Ahmad Bradshaw, prepare to have Vic Ballard, prepare to have the young rookie running back that they have. Have somebody to come in there that's going to catch passes because they're going to throw the ball to Ahmad Bradshaw. That the West Coast offense they're installing, that West Coast offense that they run, and the reason they brought Bradshaw in there, he's a perfect fit for the kind of offense they want to run. Ballard didn't really show that much skills catching balls at the backfield last year. I think Ballard's still going to be in the mix heavy. I'd rather draft Ballard than draft Ahmad Bradshaw, but when Ahmad Bradshaw is healthy, he's going to give you those big weeks, but that's a chronic foot injury. He's going to miss at least 7 games with that injury. Another guy, you talk about foot problems, Pierre Garçon. When he got inserted into that Redskins offense towards the middle of last season when he finally got healthy, they were scoring over 30 points a game. Garçon was playing as a wide receiver one down the stretch. He's already said this is something that's going to be bothering me. He didn't have no surgery in the offseason. Something that's going to be bothering him offseason. He's going to be wearing an orthopedic shoe. Excellent, excellent wide receiver three if you can get him at that. But to be prepared to have somebody come behind him on the bench that can put up that sense of production because he's not going to be there all season long. Guys with foot problems, like you said, skillful players with bad feet, it's just a tough omen. You look at what happened to Hakeem Nicks last year.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you look at Cedric Benson. He's still looking for work coming back from that same Liz Frank. And, you know, I doubt if anybody's going to be picking him up, you know, especially with his background. But, you know, unless they're in a real pinch. But, you know, speaking of Bradshaw, moving on to Indianapolis, they decided they didn't want to deal with his foot problems, which brings up, you know, David Wilson and Andre Brown. I think obviously Wilson's the guy, but Andre Brown looked pretty decent, you know, when he was in. Do you think he's going to be stealing much work from Wilson, and how do you see him as, what, RB2?
I think Wilson's the guy that's kind of really not on my draft board right now. I would have to see something very impressive out of him in his preseason. Coughlin would have to say he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the starting running back. You're drafting him in the second, third round, David Wilson, and you can draft Andre Brown in the seventh, eighth round. Give me Andre Brown. Andre Brown, until he got injured last year, when Bradshaw was out, Brown was carrying the mail. Remember the game in Carolina when he went in there and went crazy? Carolina is a poor defense, but Brown can carry the mail if he can stay healthy. Good goal line back also. You know, Wilson's a home run hitter, and, you know, a lot of things you get from Wilson out of the backfield are excellent. But I'm not paying that price tag for Wilson when I can drop down, take a gamble on Brown being a starter, or maybe, you know, getting enough of the workload to almost make Wilson's third-round draft stock look foolish.
Yeah, no question about that. So, hey, let's move on a little bit, talk about another draft trend I'm noticing. I think we can all agree, at least the three of us here, unlike some past guests, that, you know, you want to look at the running back position early and often. One thing I've noticed, and I like the way you put it, the guys we're drafting with right now, the trend going on of quarterbacks falling, which I couldn't agree more with. I mean, you're seeing the first one overall, the first one going is Aaron Rodgers at about 21 at an ADP, when last year three of these guys went in the first round. You could see Aaron Rodgers going in the top four, top five last year. These guys are dropping way down. Now, let's talk to the people in your Yahoo, that hot chicken finance who's going to do her first fantasy league this year. The quarterback position.
I want to be her. I want to be her partner. I want to help her. I will email advice.
Now, works in the finance department of the company we both work for, so it's not quite the same in our company, but I'm picturing in New York probably a little better up there. Help me illustrate the point that the quarterback position is so deep that you do not need to spend a first, first, second, or even, in my opinion, third through fifth round choice on a quarterback.
You're paying a premium price for Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and these guys in the first and second rounds. When you can drop down to, I've seen Tony Romo go as far down the draft board as the eighth, ninth round, and Tony Romo is going to finish as a top seven fantasy quarterback. Basically, to the Yahoo leaguer, when you see that big, sexy quarterback at the top of the board, just stay away from it. Build up the depth of your team. Build up your wide receiver. Build up your running back. Get good depth on your bench. Come back and grab your quarterback later, because you're going to get this very similar production from Tony Romo in round nine than you get from Aaron Rodgers in round two. And so it's almost a wash. Romo last season almost threw for 5,000 yards and 30 touchdown passes. Eli Manning is going late. Eli Manning is hit or miss fantasy-wise. So, you know, you take a gamble there. But once you start to get down to quarterback 11, 12 on the board, that's when you want to start looking for one. Normally, it depends on where you draft. If I'm in the middle of the round, I can withstand it and maybe wait till 7, 8, get a guy like Romo around that range, get a guy like Stafford around that range. If I'm drafting 1, 2, 11, 12, when you get on that turn and you got that big, long wait, maybe around 5, 6, I'll go grab me a Matt Ryan or a Russell Wilson. That's my quarterback drafting strategy.
Yeah, and it's pretty sound indeed, that's for sure. You know, you talk about the big quarterbacks. To me, it's still Rodgers, Manning, Breeze, and even Brady, until Brady's not up there, even though he's weapon depleted right now this year. I still think he's Tom Brady. But one guy that I'm really high on is Cam Newton. Last year, he started off horribly with pouting in the press conferences, and just really, it's kind of like, ah, oh, man, this guy is going to have a short career. Then all of a sudden, he picked it up and started putting out some outrageous numbers, started playing well, and actually started being the leader of that team. And I tell you what, I really like this guy. I got him number five right now behind those four that I mentioned before. And I think his ceiling is way up there, like with Manning and Rodgers and Brees.
No, I hate to be so rigid in a draft strategy, but if I'm drafting, and I just said all of that stuff about dropping down the board to get Tony Romo, that goes out the window if I'm looking at Cam Newton in the fifth round. I think Cam Newton is set up for an excellent season, and I like the addition of Mike Shula as offensive coordinator. He's a very good offensive coordinator. They still got some decent weapons out there with Olsen running up the team, not to mention Steve Smith also. And Cam is still going to give you so much on the ground, and he's a goal line running back. So, yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with Cam Newton in the fifth round. I love Cam this year. I almost think Cam can finish number one. Number two, Drew Brees is just a machine, but I think Cam can definitely have one of his best years fantasy production wise. I'm really high on Cam this season. It's just unlikely I would have him because he's not going to go where I want to take him at.
Right. No, I think he's going. You're probably looking mid third round for Cam Newton, but that's the kind of guy I'm looking for. And you mentioned Russell Wilson, and I wish I knew. And I think I know the other way. I wish I knew RG3 was going to be 100% healthy. Now, if RG3 is 100% healthy, here's a guy I'm thinking about in the third round. These are the guys I think, and the league's starting to go more that way as you're finally starting to see these guys have success. Cam Newton, the guys running the ball, your Cam Newtons, your RG3s, your Russell Wilson's going right into it. Colin Kaepernick, who I think there's a lot more risk involved with, but these types of guys, and these are where you can put up the fantasy numbers. They are, to your point with Cam Newton, becoming sort of the goal line backs, running the ball, throwing the ball. These are where I go higher. These traditional passers, I don't think there's a big difference between Aaron Rodgers / Drew Brees and go down to the fifth and sixth round where you're seeing Matt Ryan, Peyton Manning, these guys going. I really wish I knew RG3 was going to be healthy, because I think if he comes out healthy where he's being drafted now, that could end up being the steal of the draft.
Yeah, there's another player to watch right there in training camp. I don't care if the Washington Redskins are telling you and Mike Shanahan is telling you that he is running up and down the stairs of FedEx Field at 100% full speed, and he looks great, and he looks like he never even had the surgery. Do not believe anything that comes out of Mike Shanahan mouth until you see RG3 in pads doing football activities, meaning playing in a game, until you see Mike Shanahan say that Robert Griffin III is going to be the opening day starter. Until then, don't believe anything coming out of Washington, because you got to see it before you pull the trigger on it with RG3. I understand what Adrian Peterson did last year. This is this guy's second time having reconstructive knee surgery. It's still a very risky play. So until I see him doing it with my own eyes, I understand what everybody's saying. I spent a lot of time in the Washington, D.C. area, and I see him on TV, you know, doing jumping jacks and all this stuff. Let me see you run down the field, like, for 75 yards like you did against the Vikings. That's how you prove to me you're ready to go.
Yeah, that's just it. And these ACLs I worry about, I in no way comparing myself to RG3, but I'm 5 months off an ACL reconstruction myself. And I can still barely walk down the stairs into the studio here, yet let alone play in the NFC East. So yeah. I think there's just so much fear there. I can't even imagine what Adrian Peterson did, having gone through it to a much lesser degree. I can't even imagine how he did this. And I think Adrian Peterson's going to be the exception, certainly not the rule.
Yeah, you know, it almost seems like there's no time like the present to tear your ACL. I guess you could speak to that more than I could, but it's still a very he's had it twice on the same knee. That's a concern. And, you know, I love RG3. I think he's going to be excellent, and I expect him to be there week one. But I just rather temper your expectations until you see it with your own eyes.
Right.
That's still their franchise quarterback, and they handled that situation wrong last year.
Boy, you're not kidding. And you know, bringing up Peterson and Jamal Charles as well with the years that they had, that always is kind of a red flag to me, because now there's a lot of fantasy owners out there they're starting to expect these kind of results. And even though, like we said, it's probably the exception and not the rule, and I know the techniques are better and medicine's better, that's still a very serious injury. And I'm just not ready to say, okay, well, you know, it's been a few months. He's all ready to go. He's 100%. I just don't buy that. The body still has to heal, and every guy is different. And like you said, this is his second one on the same knee. And to me, that's two red flags. And I tell you what, unless I'm down in the draft, I'm staying away from him. Even though I know what he can do and the ceiling is way up there, I'm afraid of him. I'll be real honest with you.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. Listen, everybody talks about Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles, but nobody mentions Rashad Mendenhall. You know, and he looked like he was wearing leather boots when he was playing last year. So the injury can go either way. You know, when you see all the good news come out of Washington, I just want owners to be like, okay, it sounds good, but let me see him playing football before I make my decision on where I'm going to draft him. I still think he's going to be very serviceable. He's not going to be – I don't think he runs for 75-yard touchdowns anymore. Quarterbacks shouldn't be doing that, period, in the NFL. That's almost embarrassing. But that goes to show you how athletically talented and gifted he was and how that offense took the league by storm last year. I mean, Colin Kaepernick had a 60-yard touchdown run. Cam Newton had a 78-yard touchdown run running up that same formation. These are electric quarterbacks, but it's just – That reconstructive knee surgery kind of scares me a little bit. I would definitely draft him if I know that he's going to be ready, though. The weapons are there.
Yeah, that's just it, and just based on his own ability. You know, we brought up Colin Kaepernick a couple of times. This is a guy I see, based on ADP, going ahead or just in the same being put on the same plane as Peyton Manning, as some of these other guys, these 5th, 6th guys being looked at as a top 10 guy. Look, what he did at the end of the season, what he did on a playoff run, especially as a rookie, was so impressive. This isn't a guy I'm going to feel real comfortable with, Corey, going into the season as my number one quarterback. Again, we hate to say upside. I agree with you. Huge upside. I think it's just such a risk. That's a position I like, a plug and play. A guy I put in there, I know he's going to be there. I know what kind of numbers he's going to put up. Do you see Colin Kaepernick as a number one fantasy quarterback?
He's going in drafts as one, and I've taken him as one maybe about a month ago, and I'm starting to scratch my head on Colin Kaepernick now, because he really doesn't have no weapons. I mean, Vernon Davis, okay, they're lining him up at wide receiver more this season. Vernon Davis is hit or miss, period. Fantasy owners, we know that more than anybody else. Crabtree is not going to be around. Anquan Boldin is, he might as well be the tight end, you know, so it's... No real weapons. He is the weapon. Kaepernick is the weapon. But everybody in the NFL knows that now. He's not going to sneak up on anybody. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback for the 49ers. I don't know if you want to go through that on your fantasy football team. Listen, he could slide through the roof finish as a top 10 quarterback. He had that kind of athletic talent and skill. But I would proceed on the side of caution when it comes to drafting Colin Kaepernick. If you draft Kaepernick, you may have to make sure you get another quarterback somewhere later on in the draft just to be certain that you have a QB1 in fantasy football.
Yeah, that makes three of us when it comes to Colin Kaepernick, I guess, for sure. Hey, we are Fleeger and Briggs on the Asylum Fantasy Football Show. We're live with Corey Parson. And, you know, there's been a lot of moves, you know, obviously in the off season, and there's always, you know, like the butterfly effect when somebody gets moved, how it affects the team or your fantasy team, I should say. I think one of the biggest ones, I think, is Carson Palmer going to Arizona. And who it affects to me is Larry Fitzgerald. To me, this guy is vaulting right back up as one of the elite wide receivers. He threw for 4,000 yards in Oakland, and he didn't have Larry Fitzgerald. And I'm really high on Fitzgerald. I don't mind Arizona's offense. I think Mendenhall is going to be adequate enough. I think they improved their offensive line a bit. And I like Larry Fitzgerald. How about you?
No, I'm drafting Larry Fitzgerald every opportunity. Every opportunity that I have to draft Larry Fitzgerald, I've been drafting him. I think, you know, right now he's got a second-round ADP of 210. Bruce Arians' offense, we've seen what what wide receivers have done and quarterbacks have done in Bruce Arians' offense. Larry Fitzgerald is one of the best wide receivers in football when he has the right quarterback getting him the ball. So Fitzgerald, I think, is a no-doubt, hands-down wide receiver one for fantasy purposes this year. But do not forget about Michael Floyd. I think Michael Floyd, right now, if you ask me who could be a sleeper right now at the wide receiver position, my answer would be Michael Floyd. I think Michael Floyd is talented enough, and I think Carson Palmer and that offense is going to be skilled enough to be able to get Michael Floyd the ball as he is running alongside Larry Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald soaking up all that coverage. I think Michael Floyd could tear you up in the middle of the field, and he can get a good amount of red zone targets also. So Michael Floyd is my wide receiver sleeper right now.
Yeah, no question. You back to Larry Fitzgerald. Just having a competent quarterback in town, which we've seen. Of course, we saw what he did with Kurt Warner. I think he vaults right back to the top. Another guy who moved, who I find interesting, Rick talked earlier about Tom Brady lacking in weapons, obviously with the Gronkowski injury situation, the Aaron Hernandez situation. We won't spend any time on that. Danny Amendola moving to New England. Do you see him filling in the role of obviously not a Wes Welker slot type of role, but is this a potential 80, 90, 100 reception guy? Do you worry about the injuries? Where do you fall on Danny Amendola?
I worry about the injuries with Danny Amendola. I really do. Danny Amendola is same thing with McFadden. Put the sticker on the back of his helmet, handle with care. I think the way he plays, the reckless abandonment he plays with, is why these things happen now. Anybody can get injured on any Sunday. But if a healthy Amendola, I don't think he puts up Wes Welker-type numbers. I think he's a serviceable wide receiver, too, for your fantasy football team. I just would rather take a gamble on somebody else going in that same round. You know, I think if you can drop down and maybe – I think Amendola right now, if I'm not mistaken, you guys can help me out on this one. Is he going around the same time that Vincent Jackson and guys like Vincent Jackson and Dwayne Bowe are going? Marcus Colson, another guy you can get probably right now after Amendola. So I'd rather take a get, and I'm not a Colson supporter, but the numbers are always there. I don't know how, because he runs like a tight end. But, you know, I would rather take a gamble on a guy like Bo or Colson, one of those guys, than to jump up the board to get Danny Amendola.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You talk about putting up Wes Welker numbers. Being in Denver, does Wes Welker put up Wes Welker numbers?
Excuse me?
Denver, does Wes Welker put up Wes Welker-type numbers, or do you see his production taking a bit of a dip with being surrounded by some better weapons there in Denver?
I think it takes a bit of a dip, not too much. I think Deck is the guy that hurts the most. I don't think it hurts Demaryius Thomas at all. Demaryius Thomas is a wide receiver one on fantasy football teams. Red zone, middle of the field, deep threat, draft Demaryius Thomas with confidence. I think Welker, don't expect 90 catches from Welker, but still expect a solid season. They brought him in there. I think they use him. I think Deck is the one that takes a little bit under the hit. Quickly, fellas, right back to the Patriots offense. You know what I've been seeing recently in drafts, and this goes to show you how you people, fantasy owners, get a little bit of a slip of preseason news. In the past 2 weeks, Shane Vereen's ADP has went from the 11th round to the fourth round because of reports that he was lining up at wide receiver. And, of course, the Aaron Hernandez situation, and with Gronk probably going to start seeing on the pup list. I think at one point I thought Shane Vereen was a buying opportunity. I don't know if I'm going to pay a fourth or fifth round price for Shane Vereen, even though he is a running back. What do you guys think about Vereen right now?
Yeah, look, Vereen, like at 11 was a value because you never know with the coaching staff up there. He could end up at any point being the number one running back. Look, he's not beyond the gimmickry putting him at wide receiver, but even if he does play wide receiver, he's certainly not a fourth-round wide receiver, and I'm not going to pay that price when I'm going to pay a second- or a third-round price, more likely a second-round price for Stephen Ridley. I'll tell you what, other than Tom Brady, there's nobody I trust on that New England team from a fantasy perspective. Even Ridley, as good of a year as he had, he could just disappear at any minute. They could bring Mike Vrabel back and start giving him goal line carries. You just never know what he's going to do. But to go from 11th round to the 4th round because he took a couple snaps in a mini camp at wide receiver is just pure insanity.
I don't see him going, you know, as a 5th round running back. That's, you know, when the opportunity to buy was there, it was excellent, but now it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I can see him getting increased work, obviously, with Woodhead gone, but it's just insanity. I'm sorry. Fourth round, like you said, is just way too expensive. You're paying Lamar Miller price, you know is going to be a starting running back for a gamble. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, the ADP shot way up the board. I wanted to get you guys thought on that. And I was like, listen, Vereen, you can get him as a steal. He could be your flex. I could see him having a good season. But now I got to draft him as an RB2. Let's not get carried away.
Yeah, no question about it. Wide receiver, sticking with wide receivers in the little bit of time we have left. Here's a guy. I love Aaron Rodgers. I love the Green Bay offense. Here's a wide receiver going ahead of the names like Larry Fitzgerald, going ahead of Andre Johnson, going ahead of Victor Cruz, Roddy White, going on and on. Randall Cobb, for a short stretch last year, looked solid. This just isn't a guy I see as a late second-round wide receiver, which is the price tag you're paying, and above some of those names I mentioned. Is there something I'm missing with Randall Cobb?
I thought I was the only one, and I'm looking at a draft review right now, and this was last night. I mean, he went ahead of Percy Harvin. He went ahead of Wes Welker. He went ahead of Roddy White, Vincent Jackson. He went ahead of Victor Cruz. I understand that, you know, he has tremendous upside. Once again, they go with that dirty word, upside. But there's no value in drafting Randall Cobb in the third round. Now he has to catch 100 passes. He has to score 10 touchdowns. I got more faith in Jordy Nelson scoring 10 touchdowns than I do in Randall Cobb scoring 10 touchdowns, and I can get Jordy Nelson 2 rounds later.
Yeah, exactly. And between the two of us, I'm probably higher on Cobb than Rick is over here. But still, the price is way too high for him. When you, like you said, you're getting guys, Vincent Jackson, Roddy White, he's been ahead of them in ADPs, and I think people are just missing the boat. They're just seeing Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And, you know, let's not forget that there's still some wide receivers in Green Bay. And, oh, by the way, now they have a running game. I'm not buying into that. I mean, yeah, to me, he's a wide receiver too. But that's about it right now. I mean, albeit a good one, I like him. But, you know, I like Andre Johnson better, Vincent Jackson, Dwayne Bowe even. And that's just me.
No, I agree 100%. We were talking about this on the program the other morning, and you know, and Scott was like, oh, I love Randall Cobb this year, and Randall Cobb this, and I'm like, well, you willing to draft him in the third round? And Scott was like, no. And I was like, well, that's where he's going, and that's where you're going to have to get him. He's not going to last to the fourth or fifth round. It was almost like last season, Jordy Nelson shot way up to the second round. And I was like, calm down.
Yeah.
He had a great season, but let's not get carried away. People that drafted Jordy Nelson in the second round, now you know what those guys are doing? They're like, I'm not drafting him no more, because fantasy owners are funny like that. Let him down 1 year, they don't go back to you. Well, now he's slipped down to the fifth round, right around where he should be drafted at, and watch him come back and have a phenomenal season again. I think Jordy's the best wide receiver in that offense. What do you guys think about Greg Jennings this year?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. I'm not sure I'm crazy about I think he's still got the skills to do it. I'm not sure about Christian Ponder getting him the ball. That's what I worry about. He's not as dynamic as a Percy Harvin who can put up numbers on his own. Ponder's going to have to get the ball to him. Ponder took, I think, a big step forward last year, but in terms of fantasy football and putting up pure numbers, where you're getting Jennings, again, here's a guy you're getting down in the 8th, 9th, 10th rounds in some cases. I've seen him even go lower. He's been completely forgotten now that he's gone to Minnesota. I think there is value there with him. Where he's going to perform as a bye week fill-in, as an injury replacement, I think is probably about the right place for him. He still is Greg Jennings. We forgot about him because of the injuries last year. It's a big dip going from Aaron Rodgers to Christian Ponder chucking you the rock.
Yeah, man, Ponder is a problem. Like you said, I think the skill set of it is going to be healthy. He's going to be the number one wide receiver on the Minnesota Vikings, but it's still he's a wide receiver 3/4 for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And let's say he's a lot older than Harvin. I believe he's going to be, what, 32 this year?
Yeah.
30. Yeah. And I hate to use that cliche, injury prone, but he seems to be banged up more and more, and he's worried. But you know, like you say, wide receiver 3, something like that, he's certainly serviceable.
He's an insurance policy if you have a Garcon on your team. He's a good insurance policy for a guy like that.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, Corey, well, we're about out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up. We sure appreciate you coming on. We had a great time tonight. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheExecNY, the Fantasy Executive. From Sirius XM's Fantasy Sports Radio, you can catch the show on Sirius 210 XM 87 weekday mornings from beginning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, going up to 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. And also tomorrow, you know, got a very special guest, Maurice Jones-Drew. Join us at 8:15 a.m. Eastern, and we'll get a chance to ask him about this Lisfranc injury and if he's going to be ready to go for week one.
Yeah, definitely not going to miss that. So, Corey, we sure appreciate it. Hey, let's do it again before the season starts.
Definitely, definitely got to get it done, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Take it easy.
Thanks, Corey.
All right, Rick, awesome guest, I'm telling you. I remember we had him on last summer, and I remember putting in the chat room, I believe it was, I would listen to Corey read the phone book. He's just that dynamic. I think he's definitely in the right business, just a great guest.
Oh, no doubt about that. He's insightful and, you know, just totally knowledgeable. It's great to talk to somebody like
that. Yeah, and I do have to tell you, his show, The Roto Experts in the Morning, Corey very involved. He's the producer, but they definitely get him involved. It's a great listen. I know I listen on the way in to work every day. If you don't have SiriusXM and you're a fantasy football player, get SiriusXM. There is just a wealth of knowledge on there. They get players on. Don't forget MJD tomorrow at 8:15. Get it? I think we know what MJD is going to say. He's healthy and ready
fine.
To go. We know what he's going to say.
It's healed up and it's fine.
But really, for fantasy content, and without question, the most entertaining show is that morning show, which so often happens in radio. So, Rick, we're going to end up spilling over here a little bit, but I think I mentioned it a little bit off the top of the show, but we got somebody we really need to thank tonight.
Oh, you're not kidding. If you haven't gone on recently to our site, shame on you anyway, but it is totally redesigned, not completed yet. We have a couple little clicks to finish up the rankings.
That's Rick's
and so
way of
forth.
Saying I need to write a blog.
However, no, the rankings,
okay.
He still has to put the database in. But Scott Fish, thank you so much. He is, you know him from FF Oasis, Scott Fish 24 on Twitter. Totally rebuilt our website.
Did it in a matter of minutes.
No, I mean, it was
I really wish I could do that. If you, assuming you've been to our site before, it looked like a 4-year-old created it because, well, we both had the mentality of 4-year-olds, first of all, and second of all, we have the technical and web skills of, I don't know, I think
a 3-year-old.
Yeah, we'd be given 4-year-old short shrift if we started comparing ourselves to them. But it looks fantastic. It looks really professional. Just really appreciate it. I can't say thank you enough. It looks great and just an awesome thing. It's really nice, Rick. You know, one thing I say, and you know, I don't use this, I spend most time insulting people. The further we get into this one there, it really is a community, and that's cool. You don't see, I have the radio wars, the back and forth, any of this nonsense. Just great stuff. I know we're in that invitational. We're in a league with the FF Oasis and Scott heading up that league. Just I can't say it enough. We just really appreciate it to have a website that looks like a competent adult created.
Well, it does now.
Exactly, which we didn't have before.
I mean, there's still four-year-olds putting content on it.
Oh, yeah,
it looks
good. Don't read the blogs. You know, click the block and see how nice it looks there, but don't read any of it. And really, I guess if you're listening to this, it's too late, but I wouldn't click on any of those shows either because that's not worth
your
time.
It's okay. The spell check works. You know, it's not going to look garbled.
Is that what that red, those red lines on it now? See, I learned something.
That doesn't
today.
Mean a hot word.
I just thought they were. Yeah, good one. You tell them, Rick. Apparently, I was wrong.
But no, thanks to Scott.
Absolutely.
It looks fabulous.
So check him out. It's FFOasis.com. Rick, do I have that right?
I think so. And he's at ScottFish24 on Twitter.
All right. Give Scott a follow. Check out his website, definitely. We greatly appreciate it.
And, yeah, check out our site. Tell us what you think. We just can't say enough about it, and I can't wait to start throwing my shrek up there that you like to say. What do you call it?
Stick.
No, Schrepp or
Schlepp.
Schlepp, I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
All right,
my
Rick.
Dribble.
Yeah, that's definitely dribble. There's no question about
that.
But,
hey, get on iTunes. If you listen to the show, get on iTunes. Subscribe for free. Give us a listen. Give us a rate. Move us on up. We're moving on up, and I mean we're not like the Jeffersons.
To the east side.
Yeah, we're moving closer and closer, and we really appreciate it. But give us a rate.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Check it out. Check out the newly ramped website at AsylumFantasyFootball.com. Give us a follow on Twitter. That's starting to creep up, Rick. Pretty soon we're going to start having to talk about getting us to that 2,000 follower mark, which I never thought would come when we were struggling to get to that first 100. So check that out at Asylum Football. All you local, thank you to 88.1 FM WSRU, the voice of the Rock. We will be back next week on the Tuesday Night Blitz, and Rick and I will be talking this week about adding the second show. It's getting about that time with camp coming up. So until next Tuesday, we appreciate it. Thanks again, Scott Fish at FantasyFootballOasis.com. Until next week, we'll see you.
Take care.
All right, Rick, this isn't a very manly song, but I find it catchy. He's this little teeny bopper guy, kind of a pretty boy.
It doesn't surprise me you picked it.
It's catchy.
God forbid you get like a Jim Morrison
somebody. If it didn't happen in 1842, it's not cool. I'm not arguing this is cool.
Catch foot in mouth.
It's catchy, that's all
I'm
I'm going to let it play out.
That's not even catchy.
What do you mean it's not good? Wait till
it's not like some junior high.
Wait till we get to the hook. Come on, it's catchy. Listen. I'm head bobbing.
And he actually is, which is even more pathetic. I mean, the guy can sing, but it's just a crummy song.
Yeah, handsome chap, too. I got to give him credit. Girls make sights, they do. All right, now that we've talked through the entire outro, why don't we just get out of here?
Let's leave.